Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, Comcast plus Time Warner equals lots of funny tweets. Plus, Facebook narcissism might be on the downward spiral. And anonymous blogging starts hoaxes. What's next? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 149, recorded February 13th, 2014. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR2. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 270,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/socialhour to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour. It is episode 149 in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Sarah. How are you doing?
Hello, Amber. I'm doing really well. You look very glamorous today, if I may say so. What's going on?
I have to say that I feel a little bit like, is it Snuffleupagus in Sesame Street who has the big eyelashes?
Is that what's going on? Is that the glamour? It's extra
it
eyelashes?
I was on a shoot this morning and the makeup artist put on these really big eyelashes. So for our audio listeners, basically think about Snuffleupagus and the giant lashes. So it's a little bit like that. And right after the shoot, I went and put on like sweatpants and a comfy t-shirt and everything. So it's sort of I've got a weird look going on, Sarah.
I think you look great. I think you look just as nice as Mr. Snuffleupagus for sure.
Thank you.
I haven't said that name in, I don't know, 30 years or something. So that was I'm just glad that you brought it up.
It's a nice memory, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, it's funny. This is, you probably well aware of this because we're about the same age and also, you know, you're a mom. But when Sesame Street was, this is a Sesame Street reference for anybody who's like, who's Mr. Snuffleupagus? He's like a big, he kind of looks like an elephant, but with fur.
Like
anyway.
A mammoth.
Yeah, a mammoth. When I was a little kid, he was Big Bird's friend, but nobody but Big Bird could ever see him. And that was sort of the running joke, is that everyone thought that he was imaginary, but he was actually real. And apparently sometime after I stopped watching Sesame Street because I got too old or whatever, there was like a whole thing where child psychologists had said, you know, it's actually not a good idea to teach kids that, you know, people won't believe them when they're telling the truth. Because basically Big Bird was like, no, he was real. He was just here. And everyone's Aww. Like, yeah, right, Big Bird. Mr. Snuffleupagus isn't real. And so Sesame Street made him be seen by everybody.
It's interesting.
It's weird, huh? Weird little pieces of Sesame Street trivia. Yeah.
It is interesting. You know, it almost reminds me with kids where you say, oh, it's just our secret. You know, here's a chocolate. And every time I say that to a child, I have this real creepy feeling where I think, okay, you know what? We shouldn't teach you to keep secrets, right?
Yeah, really.
And it's always interesting. But Sesame Street has such an amazing history. And, you know, when you go online, I mean, I think they have like a Sesame Street wiki. There's just so much information when you dive into the history of all the different characters. I think it's absolutely fascinating whether you have kids or not.
I think so too. I love Sesame Street. In fact, they've been in the news lately, but we're not going to talk too much about Sesame Street on this show.
No.
The Social Hour, of course, is a combination of stories and tips and spotlights that Amber and I have found and enjoyed over the last week. This first one is pretty topical. Last night, after I got home, actually, the news broke that Comcast is buying Time Warner Cable. And no matter what you think of that, it has been a pretty hot topic on social media, hasn't it, Amber?
It really has. The same experience happened to me, Sarah, in the sense I was on Twitter. I noticed people starting to chat about this. It seemed almost unbelievable at first. And then when you start to read into it, you realize, hey, this is actually taking place. And some of the tweets got pretty hilarious. I knew there was going to be a social side to this. So Gizmodo had posted an article talking about the 50 best tweets about the Comcast-Time Warner Cable merger. At the very top of the list, is my favorite. Comcast acquiring Time Warner Cables, like Nickelback and Creed deciding to go on tour together.
Ouch. I mean, no offense to anybody who loves Nickelback and Creed, but I get the point.
Yes, exactly. It's definitely a funny comment. And there are many other tweets here, some of them not necessarily safe for the show. But it's funny to see how creative people can be so quickly.
Well, it's interesting, too. And of course, this is all compiled. These are 50 tweets compiled by people who are basically saying, this is a terrible idea. We've got, monopoly issues, but they're both just known as terrible companies. I went and actually looked at some of the Gizmodo comments, and there are some people saying, listen, I've had really good experience with Comcast customer service and explaining their situation and that sort of thing. I am a Comcast customer. I use Comcast for my internet. I haven't needed to get anybody on the phone in a while. I've never had Time Warner Cable, but I do know, particularly my friends in New York, hate it. It's sort of, widely hated as a cable network. And I think the problem that a lot of people have in areas, so for example, where I live, I don't have any other choice. If I want to buy some television package, it's Comcast or it's nothing. And that, if that's your only option, well, it already feels very constrained. But if you have any sort of a situation with either bad service or prices that seem like they're gouging you, obviously these are the sorts of companies that people love to hate. It's like the telephone companies, the cable companies, nobody's really, really in love with this. But I guess the jokes aside, does it seem like the kind of deal that will be passed? I mean, is people shouting, monopoly and antitrust issues, I wonder how much of a point they have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know in terms of what will go on in the U.S., but I know in Canada, for example, a lot of monopolies here, and we're sort of used to that. Everybody kind of owns, there are a couple of companies who own everything. So you really don't have as much of a choice when it comes to different telcos, which all own the cable companies. And at the end of the day, there are just a couple of biggies out there. So we're kind of used to that, I think, up here. But I don't know. I mean, I think people are pretty angry about it. And I think you're right. There's a lot of hatred towards companies like this. And no matter what they do, they just can't win. And I do agree with your point about Comcast and customer service, because I think they did a really poor job in the early days of customer service online. But over time, they really became one of the top companies in terms of dealing with issues that would arise through social media channels, particularly on Twitter. And they started to really be much more proactive there.
Yeah, Comcast cares. It's sometimes the butt of a joke, because if you have a bad experience with Comcast, then there's all sorts of ways to say Comcast doesn't actually really care. But Comcast cares. The Twitter account is huge. And that's, I feel like that that particular account and brand is one of the first really big company brands that I can think of where Comcast said, okay, we're going to have, people around the clock dedicated to answering questions and making sure that the public knows that there are actual people behind this company that are trying to make things better.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost the opposite issue, right? They do a great job through social media channels. And then when you actually call them on the phone or they come to your house, it's hard to be able to control that experience. So I think that's almost the next level of social, is ensuring that that positive experience really trickles throughout the different channels and into a real world experience, which I don't think is as easy to control, unfortunately.
No, I don't either. This news isn't even 24 hours old, and it took me by surprise. So we will, we'll probably have more social stuff to talk about as the Comcast Time Warner Cable merger or non-merger, however it may be, continues to unfold. Now over to LinkedIn. LinkedIn partnered with a market research firm, a TNS study. They polled 998 social media businesses in the U.S. and in Canada. They weren't all LinkedIn users, but this was a LinkedIn-sponsored survey. That's according to a company spokesperson. Now, when you say, well, what's a small business? A small business is not necessarily headcount. It's LinkedIn considers it revenue-based. So if you've got revenue between $1 million and $9.9 million, you're small. A medium business has revenue between $10 million and $49.9 million. This is annual, of course. And they came up with some pretty interesting results. 81% of both small and medium-sized businesses use social media. And of those that say, yes, we do use social media, 94% of them say they use social media for marketing. I don't think I'm surprised, Amber, that we see a lot of small and medium-sized businesses saying, yes, we use social media. But the numbers here are absolutely huge, considering that I think it's still somewhat of an anomaly when we say, oh, yeah, that's one of those businesses that has a social media presence, like Comcast Cares. I don't know that I feel this way about pretty much every business.
Yeah, you know, it's been interesting over the past few years to really watch these small and medium-sized businesses start to jump on board in terms of social, because 5 years ago, many of them didn't have any type of presence. And very quickly, I mean, it's getting close to 100% of these companies who are using social, a big percentage of them using it for marketing. And I'm curious what will happen in the next 5 years, because I think now it's like, okay, you know what? We're set up, we use these accounts, but we're really not seeing maybe the sales that we want to see. So how do we take that to the next level? And that's the point where I think companies really struggle, and it's about creating content and managing the channel. So it's funny, we think about social media being around for so long, but it's really such early days. And I think there's a lot of growth that will happen, particularly among this group who are always probably trying to shave costs in terms of their marketing budgets.
I think too, if you look at a network like Facebook, Facebook is so global. It's not necessarily a, oh, here's my little area of Facebook that's dedicated to my neighborhood. But Facebook has 1 million advertisers. This is according to the Mashable article that talked about this LinkedIn story. 1 million advertisers, but 25 million businesses have active Facebook pages. These aren't necessarily small and medium-sized businesses, but overall, there seems to be so much potential that just having a presence on Facebook is not necessarily the marketing strategy that's the best use of a small or medium-sized business's time and money, mm-hmm. or at least time, because it doesn't really cost anything to maintain a page. But so that advertising potential I can see changing a lot more, although there will have to be some sort of geolocated changes made so that these businesses end up thriving on a place like Facebook.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. And I'm curious, I mean, Sarah, I don't know your experience, but I find now when I'm going to a small business, maybe in my neighborhood, or I'm looking up a small business online, if they're not on social, it's almost a situation right now where I'm somewhat skeptical about the company. You know, what do they have to hide? So it's become such a norm, I think, in this day and age.
Yes, very, very true. I'm not even going to talk about Twit as a small or medium business because I don't know anything about our revenue. But I will say, you know, it's a challenge. It's a challenge to figure out, okay, what is our presence on social media? Where do we want to make more of an effort? Where do we get the most out of it? And again, as we say, I feel like we say this every week, there's just not one right way to do this. It depends on what kind of business you are and how much you want to put into it.
You know, this is also another question I have for our listeners and viewers, because I've always wondered about this with small businesses and that term, because very often it is that $1 million to $10 million revenue range. But there are lots of companies who make, you know, less than $1 million. So what do you call those businesses, Sarah? Micro businesses?
Yeah.
I'm very curious. Are they just not businesses in the eyes of the real business professionals?
Yeah,
very
really. Strange. Beta businesses?
Beta businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
Baby businesses?
I guess if you're pulling in less than 1 million per year, LinkedIn's like, you know, you
don't care.
You're just, this is a pet project for you.
We're not interested.
Yeah. We're interested in you buying some business accounts here, and you might not, so we're just not going to even factor you into some of these numbers.
You can't afford it. We have another interesting story here about Facebook narcissism, saying that Facebook narcissism makes way for the anonymity movement. This is quite a headline from Ad Age, and it's talking in particular about Mark Zuckerberg and the fact that he recently alluded to building apps that would allow users to sign in anonymously, recognizing that users do want this. They want the ability to not share as much personal information, and not a whole lot of details around this, Sarah, but What do you think? I mean, do you think that they're going to go through with this? And how does that even make sense for Facebook and change the Facebook experience?
Good question. I read this Ad Age story and I thought, oh, okay. So what's the new product? What is Facebook doing that's going to make it seem a little bit more like something that Snapchat does, where you've got messages and you can kind of go throughout your day communicating with people and it not leaving such a digital footprint somewhere? And I don't know how Facebook does this. I mean, Facebook, Facebook Auth, which, you know, authorization, which is Facebook's way to use Facebook log into third-party sites and services, I use all the time just because it's convenient and I've sort of given up on wanting to make a new account at a lot of places because I sign up for a lot of things. And that is, you know, and every time it's like Facebook will want to access all of your friends and whatever to use for this app. And I say yes. And then it says, do you want Facebook to post on your behalf? And I say no. And it's the same thing every time. But that's just spreading all my information around. There's nothing anonymous about it. It's the opposite of anonymous for the sake of convenience. So I don't know how Facebook would offer something that doesn't tie into the heart of its ecosystem.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I don't get it. I suppose they could build some sort of a Snapchat clone competitor. Facebook has done that with other services in the past. But I don't know why anybody would use it because it kind of turns into a joke after a while that Facebook made Facebook Poke, for example, and nobody used it. And Facebook supposedly tried to buy Snapchat, and that didn't work out because Snapchat didn't want to be part of Facebook. And what would Facebook do to make us all more anonymous? I don't know that they can backpedal very much at this point.
I think it pretty much goes against everything that is inherently Facebook. And so I think in many ways, it just seems like Zuckerberg kind of paying lip service to the fact that people are always worried about privacy with Facebook and just talking more generally about some of the new apps that they're creating. And I can't see it actually ever happening. Sarah, also wanted to just mention, because I just tweeted out that we got a couple of tweets in the past few minutes, and one from Blue Stripe Creative, who says, at Amber Mac, at Sarah Lane, give a shout out to people in New York and the East Coast who are facing the snowstorm today because they'll be inside and listening. So,
well, hello people on the East Coast. Yeah.
Stay safe.
I don't know what's going on in Toronto, Amber, but the East Coast of the U.S. is getting pummeled with the snow. It's been quite a year so far. And I know a lot of people are grounded and they can't get out on flights. And there are people who can't get back to New York. And it sounds like quite a mess.
I know. It does sound like quite a mess. So stay inside, stay safe, and watch The Social Hour. It's pretty easy.
Yes, exactly. So last week, was it last week, Amber, that we talked about Secret?
And it was, yes.
Okay, so it was last week, and a lot has happened in the last week. I felt like, and to anybody who missed the show last week or needs a little reminder, this is the app that allows you to post anonymous things, sort of the antithesis of our previous story, but based on your phone's contact list, you would still be anonymous, but you're sharing it based on those friends that you have. So if I post something that's a secret, anybody on my contact list, and really friends of those friends have the potential to see it, comment on it, like it, screenshot it, and so on. And the idea is that it's supposed to make people, I don't know, speak their mind more freely, get it off your chest, tell the secrets, sort of like a diary. But I noticed over the weekend, there were a couple of posts that were not calling anybody out by name, but were very clearly about people that I knew. And they weren't flattering things. Mm-hmm. And it was the sort of thing where it's like, oh my gosh, I know who they're talking about. Wait a second, why does that excite me? That's bad. This is not something that I should be doing with my time. And I got very up in arms about the whole thing. And you know, I'm talking to people over the weekend. Nobody should be using this. This is just bad. This is gossip, rumor mongering. It's terrible. And then I just kind of like forgot it existed and I lost interest. And now people are sending me screenshots like, who do you think this is? And it's like, I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah. You know, it's, I think when you're beyond high school, that wears off, right?
Yeah, it was kind of like a, wait a second, is this actually what I want to be doing? Because I don't like the way this is making me feel about myself. Now, of course, Secret is not about, you know, saying bad things about people, but that's just what ends up happening when people are anonymous. It always turns that way, which I don't like very much. However, we've got an article here. This was I saw this. Whoever shared this was somehow in my contact list. That Secret has become a place to spread rumors that might throw business deals off or make reporters jump onto stories that may not be true. Case in point, an anonymous Secret that was posted to the app said, "I work at Evernote and we're about to get acquired." I remember seeing that, and it actually spawned, at least in my list, a bunch of clones like, "Well, I work at Apple and we're about to get acquired."
Oh, boy.
You know, so it got silly quick. But that little secret alone is the sort of thing where you think, is that really true? If this employee really believes in his or her anonymity, why wouldn't you post that? Maybe that is true. And so it spawned this whole kind of like, now what happens? By the way, Phil Libin, who is the CEO of Evernote, took to Twitter and said, "No, absolutely not. That's not actually true." So it at least got somebody on a high level at the company to have to make some sort of a public statement, which was basically just based on nothing, because, you know, an anonymous tip left on an anonymous app network is meaningless. But then again, how do you know that it wasn't true?
I know. It's just bizarre, right? And it's one of those situations, I think, with Secret, where after a while, I think people will get sick of it pretty fast. That would be my forecast for the potential of Secret. And it just feels to me like the only place that anonymous stuff like really actually works are maybe anonymous tip lines when the police have them. Otherwise, I can't really see a great place for anonymity in terms of sharing stuff like this, because I think the concept of having a secret in the internet world, it just doesn't go hand in hand, right? It's absolutely impossible to have secrets in the digital space. And I can't see a secret necessarily catching on, because people are going to just continue to make stuff up and there's no way to really verify it. And there's no, unlike the police, where maybe you do try to verify tips that are coming in, hopefully. Mm-hmm. With Secret, I mean, it's no one's job to verify any of this stuff, right? It's not like they're sitting there saying, okay, this is, you know, you can vote on this and this is 100% accurate because enough people have said so. It's just, it's nonsense at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. Somebody in chat said, I'd be surprised if this was ever going to be picked up outside of the San Francisco area. It certainly is not San Francisco based, but I do find that so much of my stream, I opened it up yesterday and I looked at it and, you know, let's see if there's anything scandalous, because I knew we were going to be talking about it today. And it's like, there is a lot of Silicon Valley stuff that's just, it's not interesting. It just isn't. It's very insidery. I'm not interested in it. And I can't imagine anybody else would be either. Now, of course, it does all depend on your contact list, so we're not all seeing the same stuff, kind of like Twitter, really. But if we were saying rad or fad, it's like it's already a fad that I'm no longer even interested in at this point, and that only took a week.
Yeah. I know. That's how quickly some of these apps kind of live and die. And in fact, just to tease later on in the show for the rad or fad, we do have an app that we are going to figure out if that is rad or fad. So, we'll check that out later. And it has absolutely nothing to do with secrets, but it has a lot to do with the Olympics.
Oh, this is something I can get behind. All right. Well, that's a little bit later in the show. Quick reminder that everybody who's watching us live knows we have a new time as of January 1st of this year. Social Hour is live on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. And if you are watching us on demand, that's great. That's we're listening to us, because I know some of you listen on your commutes or throughout the day. But if you'd like to subscribe to the show and figure out what audio and video feeds you have to choose from, because we've got a bunch of different kinds. We've got HD video. We've got a small video, which is great for mobile devices. twit.tv/TSH is our website to grab all of that stuff. Amber and I put our links in to everything that we talk about on the show on each episode page there. So it's a great place to get everything you need to know, Social Hour, whether you can watch us live or not. And thanks to everybody who contributes every week. All right, before we get into our social tip, which is in just a moment, let's take a moment to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create a professional website or online portfolio. It's funny, I actually recently decided, okay, well, you know, SarahLane.com, which is a Squarespace site, it's where I've hosted it, it needs a new look. And I made some changes and I got into some DNS issues because my registrars, I was transferring and it was just a messy thing. Anybody who's ever been in domain mapping hell understands my plight. And what did I do? I opened up a support ticket with Squarespace, and Squarespace, their customer service is so good. They're so willing to help and they always get back to you right away. I mean, it's less than an hour for sure each time. And they helped me out with my problem, which was a very sort of specific, hard to understand, what did I do wrong type of a problem. Got my domain mapped correctly, and I really appreciated it because it was the sort of thing I would have just spun my wheels over the weekend and been extremely upset. But not just good customer service, because Squarespace is actually quite easy to use. It wasn't even their issue I was having. It was with my registrar. They have beautiful designs. 25 templates just get you started. You don't even necessarily want to change them because they look so nice. But this is something that you can also use as a jumping off point if you want to further design it and customize it. They recently added a logo creator tool, which is a tool for somebody like you or me or a small business that might have limited design resources to create a nice little identity for themselves. This is actually extremely fun. There's a little cat logo, and I don't know if I want to go there on my own website, but if you wanted to, they've got that there. It's really, really cool. It's also easy to use. They have a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to self-help articles. If you don't want to go ahead and submit a ticket, they've got video workshops. E-commerce is another area that Squarespace is really going all in on. You can now have an e-commerce part of your site. It's available at all subscription plan levels. Includes the ability to accept donations if you're a nonprofit, or maybe
I know.
Or maybe you've put together a wedding website and you're thinking, well, you know, it would be nice for people to donate to our honeymoon fund. I know that that's a trend that people do more and more. Any sort of let's raise some cash for a school fund, for example. And it starts at just $8 a month. And it includes that free domain name if you sign up for a year, $8 a month. And that's for everything. I mean, that's your design, that's your hosting, that's your customer support. It's all in one place. These people are great. Maybe, perhaps most importantly, your Squarespace site is just going to look great anywhere. It's mobile ready. Everything is going to look good on a smartphone, on a tablet, on desktops. You can check site stats from your mobile device. That's with the Squarespace app. You can see who's visiting, where they're coming from, you know, who's following you on social media. So in general, Squarespace is just amazing. I can say I've been a happy customer of theirs for, oh gosh, 5 years now, more than that. And I think they're great. You can start a 2-week free trial, no credit card required, and start building a website. See how you like it. See how you like the back end of everything. If you want to sign up for Squarespace, use the offer code SocialHour2, that's social hour and then the number 2. Get 10% off. And you know, you can show your support for us and get a little cash off in the meantime. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Social Hour. A better web awaits for you, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. All right, awesome. Amber, it is tip time, and I'm excited because this one's coming from our good friend Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah, you know, Gary V puts out so much great content, Sarah. That's what I've been noticing lately. I mean, he writes on Medium, he writes on LinkedIn, he pushes out a ton of content for one guy who is so busy doing books and speaking and running a company. And then I found this SlideShare presentation. I'm not even sure how I found it, but it's kind of interesting. It's almost 40 slides long. It's the number one mistake everybody makes on Twitter. And there are a bunch of different slides, and in perfect Gary V humor, he explains from the very beginning beginning, how he gets frustrated in terms of how people write tweets, and a better way in particular to start your Twitter message. So what he'll say with some particular slides is that a lot of people still haven't understood that if you want everybody to see your tweet, you need to either have a period in front of it or just start it with a word and then put an at symbol if you're including someone in it. And he goes to great lengths to describe the perfect way to formulate a tweet so everyone sees it. And this is kind of basic stuff for us, I think, but I cannot believe how many people ask me on a regular basis, okay, well, which tweets do people see? Which don't they see? What shows up in my stream for people following me? And I don't think they totally understand that just yet.
This is, I've seen this slide share, and it's made the rounds, definitely. And this is interesting, Amber, because I don't actually agree with Gary that this is a good thing, but I understand what he's going for, that if you are to, and his whole story is that he's a big sports fan, and if he tweets at Patriots, which is an NFL football team that apparently he doesn't like, and then the rest of the message, the only people who will see that are people that are not just following him, but also following the at Patriots account. Yeah. If you just simply put a period in front of that at sign, then it breaks basically the Twitter syntax and it turns into a tweet that you're sharing with everybody that just follows you, not necessarily both accounts. And that's true. And that is something that I see happen a lot. Maybe, Amber, I have too many people in my stream that use that tactic regularly. And to me, it feels like it's a lazy way to put together a tweet, because it's like all you have to do is recompose the sentence or say something like, hey, at Patriot. Exactly. You know, it's the period always seems like, oh, I'm using the least amount of effort in order to blast this out to everybody. And that's forcing Sarah to see it. And I don't like that. I feel like that's pushy Twitter behavior.
It is almost too obvious, but I know we didn't quite get to the end of Gary's presentation, but when he gets into the last few slides, he actually says that. So it's kind of a process, and I actually love the presentation. I just think it's kind of cute how he took almost 40 slides to explain this, and kind of fun. And towards the end of it, he says, you know, an even better way to do this, instead of putting the period in front of the username, is to in fact reword the sentence, the 140 characters, and write something that is a little more natural. So he says, just find a different way to structure the sentence. The at Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl since they were caught cheating, and just saying truth. Those are his hashtags. So he does rephrase it at the end. And I do not like the period in front of a username. I think it's too obvious, right?
Yeah.
I mean, take a minute and just try.
Right. There's something about it that I don't know why it bothers me so much. I feel like it's I don't know. I don't know. Why it bothers me, but again, I think the larger message is there are things that people are doing on Twitter all the time and saying, you know, why it doesn't seem like anybody's listening, and these are just common mistakes. And yes, it does seem very like, oh, that's the most obvious tip ever to so many of us who use Twitter regularly. But let's remember, the company is trying to sign up as many new users as possible. You know, they're a public company now, and they're trying to retain their users, but also get new ones. And Twitter has always been confusing and kept a lot of people away.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Although, Sarah, I realize that I'm supposed to stop agreeing with you because we agree too much.
So. Oh, right. Yes.
Sarah, you're right. Wrong. I agree with Gary on this one.
Well,
I'm going to start all my tweets now with a period and then a username.
Sure. Okay.
Every time I tweet you now, I'm going to just do period, username. See how that goes.
Well, Tweetbot has a mute function. Just saying.
Oh, no.
Just saying.
The battle starts.
All right. So what is our spotlight of the week? It's got kind of a funny little URL, but I don't know this company.
This is a service called attending.io, and it's a simple little web service. And what it does, it allows you to organize free events in a really, really simple way. So when you're doing so, you can also keep track of email addresses from people who are signing up. You don't even actually need to sign up for this particular service, but it's really as simple as going in, creating a page for an event, and then from there you can send everyone the link and you can keep track of who is attending. So you can sign in with your Twitter account if you choose to, to or Facebook. But at the end of the day, you don't have to spend a lot of time logging or creating an account for this particular service. And it's one of these tools, Sarah, that reminds me of the early days, maybe of Web 2.0. You know, mm-hmm. there are a lot of really simple tools out there just allow you to do something really basic, but they evolved into more. And I think this is a good one. If you want to host an event, you don't know what service you want to use, and some of the services that are more popular out there, maybe it's a situation where it's just too complicated or complex for what you're trying to do. And this makes it all that much easier.
I love the design of nice, attending.io. Yeah. I love how all of the attendees, it's very social based. So once you see a list of who's said, yes, I'm coming to this particular event, it's got their little Twitter username. Yeah. You've got a handy little follow button. So maybe if it's industry related, that would be a really easy way to start following a bunch of people that you know you're going to meet or you'd like to meet or you've just met. But at the same time, I feel like every so often I hear of a great service like this. It's all supposed to make putting events together easier than ever. I think most people agree that Facebook events are helpful because everybody's on Facebook, but at the same time, they're not a great way to put together an event. You end up missing people, and some people don't check their events, or they've got notifications turned off, and it doesn't always work that well. In fact, I know people who say, if you've made a Facebook event, I guarantee you I won't see it and I won't come because that's just not the way that it works for me. So what is the solution? Something like attending, it sure is nice, but then you've got to convince everybody to use a tool that's not associated with any tool that they're already using. And that, I think, is a real challenge. Plancast, this kind of reminds me of Plancast, which I don't want to say it doesn't exist anymore, but it's not something that I've seen for any events, at least in my larger circle, for some time.
What's the really popular event?
Evite?
No, I'm thinking of, it's not Meetup, it's something else. Like, it's a little more in-depth. I'm just blanking on the name right now. Maybe someone in the chat room can throw a couple of those services our way. But I think one of the reasons this appealed to me is that I hate Facebook events. I never even look at them. Just like you said, a lot of people do that. And so it seems like there has to be an easier way for someone to kind of just quickly get attention from people and be able to organize something like this. So it's pretty basic. It's simplistic. But if you want something fast and quick, this is kind of a one-off solution, I think.
I like it. Attending.io. I'm gonna see if I can get it to trend. Because I don't actually think I've gotten an Evite in a while, but I do get a lot of paperless posts, and I don't really like that service either. Well, anyway, that's a whole.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of them are. They're just, I don't know what it is, but I haven't seen one that I really love, and they're just cumbersome and not that user friendly, and so it seems like there's room in this space for something more interesting and a little easier.
Yeah, and it kind of almost reminded me of Medium, at least the UI wise, it's nice and clean, makes sense, got a little map functionality there. So, all right, cool. Attending.io, if anybody wants to check it out. And if you have either used this to plan and host an event and found it very easy, or the opposite, do let us know. thesocialhour@twit.tv.
Yes. So this is kind of interesting. I feel like we maybe have touched on this story before, but I didn't know all of the technology around it. But it's an article that was in the New York Times on one of their blogs, their technology blogs. It says, finally, a way to make a selfie statue. And this made my head almost spin because I thought, I mean, really, could the selfie get more horrible? Even though I do selfies all the time. But nonetheless, it talks about how figurines may be a popular next step for the selfie, and how a Microsoft Kynect will allow you, using a service called Shapeify.me, to create your own figurine, a 3D version of yourself, a selfie of sorts that you could, what would you do with this, Sarah? Put it on your desk?
Well, I will say that this actually, I'm familiar with the whole idea of this because Alex Gumpel, who is one of our wonderful engineers here at Twit and doesn't seem to be sitting at a desk right now, but over the holidays had given me a little 3D printed out Doge.
Oh, dog. Yeah, that's super cute. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, you know, it was the weirdest gift ever, but everybody you know, around here thought it was great. So same idea. So I've actually seen at least something. I don't think he used Shapify specifically, but it was neat. I don't know what I would do with a little 3D selfie of myself. Perhaps it's a good gag gift to give it to other people. Like, hey, look, you could have a little pocket, Sarah, when you miss me or something like that. I don't know. But if it looks a lot like us, that's interesting. I guess people would have to put in sort of their body dimensions, and that could get a little dicey if your 3D little selfie comes back and you're like, hey, I don't look like that.
Is this like the evolution of the bobblehead, though? That's what I was wondering. You know how people, there was a point where they would make bobbleheads, or maybe it's because I live in Toronto and Rob Ford is still getting a lot of negative attention, and there are people who have Rob Ford bobbleheads. It's kind of a thing going around.
Is this really?
I don't know. Any way to make fun of him. Although we just had I had a little shoot earlier today, and the guys I was with, they came up with this idea of a Rob Ford 8-ball. Since he has a drug problem, and more importantly, you could shake it and it would have Rob Ford phrases on it that were just ridiculous. So there's some money to be made there, Sarah.
At least the city of Toronto has banded together to try to make as light of possible of the situation, considering that it's pretty awful. You know, at the end of the day, sometimes all you can do is make social jokes.
Come together on Twitter and try to get through it. Although the book Crazy Town by Robin Doolittle, which just came out all about Ford, it's just been optioned for a movie as of earlier this week. So it's you're not going to stop hearing about it. So we need a Rob Ford filter.
Rob Ford filter. Yes. Well, in the meantime, I suppose you could make a little Rob Ford 3D selfie at shapify.me or just make one of whoever you like. I don't know. Maybe I should make this. Maybe we should all have a little pocket version of ourselves. It could be like your little friend, your little angel on your shoulder.
And then we could battle, Sarah.
Yeah.
Or conflict. We could battle together.
That's right. It could be like the new Dungeons and Dragons, you know, but instead of warlocks and, I don't know, other things, we would be in the battle.
We're trying to make it get rich on this show, and just by brainstorming to
that's
our
right
audience.
That's right. And we've got some good ideas. Everyone who watches the show should know by now we've got some really, really solid ideas. Here's an idea. Virgin America has decided, oh, we should have a social network associated with people who fly us frequently. They've announced a new social network to help you make, how they call it, business contacts in the sky. So the idea is that there's an app. It's a real app. It's called Here on Biz. It's already live in Apple's App Store, which is a social app that's location aware, and it's supposed to be centered around business connections. The way that Virgin America comes in is Virgin America has teamed up with the makers of Here on Biz to make the app work up in the sky at 35,000 feet. It uses Gogo's in-flight Wi-Fi network, which it already has a partnership with Virgin America. It has an API that calculates an aircraft's location in the sky so that if I'm on the app and you're on the app, Amber, or maybe you're not even on my plane, but we're both in the air and we've got some stuff in common, you end up possibly meeting other like-minded people who fly a lot. This seems like a bit of a stretch for a social network, but hey, maybe you saw that George Clooney movie Up in the Air a few years ago. Maybe people who fly all the time get a little lonely, and maybe we should be meeting more of each other.
You know what, Sarah? I just had this conversation with someone the other day, and I actually think I would use this app because I'm a plane talker, and I know no one's going to want to fly with me ever again. But I cannot tell you over the years, because I do fly quite frequently, how many business contacts I've made on flights. I mean, literally, I would say 50% of the flights that I go on, I meet someone who I either eventually end up doing business with, or I'll go out to business meetings with them. I just flew back from New Orleans on the weekend. I met someone else and we've been talking about doing some work together. And so I think it actually is a really great place to be able to meet someone and have conversations. I'm not sure if an app makes sense, because I think one of the nice things about doing it just face to face is the fact that you have kind of a set amount of time to sit and talk to someone, get to really know them. I mean, I feel like this guy I met recently coming back on the flight from New Orleans, we, you know, 3 hours beside each other and we talked the whole time, and there's a lot of sharing going on, and it's a great way to make business contacts. So I might actually use something like this, but Virgin America is no longer flying to Toronto, so that means I'll have to move.
Oh, yeah, better move. You better move.
Just
it's
for
time.
The app.
It's time. Yeah, you go down to Florida full time or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is not, I'm not the target audience, because I just don't fly very much for work at all. I don't really fly that much for personal, but most of the time it's vacation stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily looking to make contacts with the person next to me. But again, yeah, if you're a captive audience, and you certainly are on a plane, there is that nice feeling of, oh, cool, this interesting person might become a new business contact. What luck that we're both in, you know, row 7. But the idea that you might maybe see on Twitter, let's say, mm-hmm. this person that you've always sort of admired in your line of work, and they happen to be tweeting about being in an airplane or being in an airport, it's like you could kind of time the whole thing and say, ooh, I wonder if they're on my social network, and figure out a way to exchange information that way. I don't know exactly if that's the way that Virgin America is thinking we should be using this app, but it's compelling for at least those frequent flyers.
Yeah, I mean, especially I think if you're on the same flight, that's where it becomes interesting. Otherwise, I just see it as, well, you don't have to be flying to find that person and network with them, right?
So true.
That's the only situation. But I think if you're on the same flight, it could make some sense. And Sarah, I know we have one more story, but I also wanted to mention we have a Twitter question to tackle maybe after our next story.
All right. We will do that after. This is sort of just a little roundup. That I thought I would put in the show because we had some acquisitions that were very social this week. Yahoo, about 2 days ago, acquired the company called Wander. The price is still sort of in dispute because it's not public. TechCrunch puts it at around $10 million. What's interesting about this company is that they make an app that is called Days, it's Days or Day. I want to make sure I get that right. But it is Day. Okay. Oh, no, Days. I was right. Okay. So, and this is an app that I've got on my iPhone somewhere. My iPhone isn't next to me right now. But the idea is that if you're sharing a moment of your life, oh, I'm having coffee, or here's a photo of the game that I'm at, or I'm with Amber, that sort of thing. Collectively, those are sort of an interesting snippet, but on their own, it might be a little too much. So maybe you're not interested in following all of my little check-ins throughout the day, Amber, but first thing in the morning to see what Sarah did yesterday might make more sense. So you can kind of digest a little bit more information about a snapshot of someone's life at once. Well, that's the app. Yahoo has acquired it. The makers of the app, apparently that team will remain in New York where they're based. They're going to be part of Yahoo's mobile and emerging products team, which makes me wonder, I wonder what Yahoo wants to do with that. Yahoo clearly wants to figure out how to have some social network functionality that it doesn't right now. Mm-hmm. This is not necessarily it, but they certainly like the team and they like the technology.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm always surprised with Yahoo acquiring all of these different companies, because there have been quite a few acquisitions, especially since Marissa Mayer took over at the top of Yahoo. So it seems to me some of them end up living on, some of them die. Many of them are really just talent acquisitions. So it's hard to say what will end up happening with this one. But hey, if Yahoo is buying and you have a small tech company out there that does something unique, then I'm sure it's an exciting time for many of these startups for sure.
Another little acquisition, and this is, as reported by Recode a couple days ago, that Lithium Technologies, who I had never heard of before, was going to acquire the social network Clout, which we did just talk about.
We did.
Because we talked about the Clout team not so much pivoting so much, but trying to reinvent itself a little bit as less of a, here, let's put a number on how great you are at the internet, and more of a place for original content. And the two may be very much related. So if you are interested in what Lithium does, the company apparently provides social customer experience management software for the enterprise.
Okay.
I don't know exactly what that has to do with what Clout does, but I suppose if you spin Clout a little bit into something that's more business-oriented and you're able to use that quantified ranking system to figure out how happy your customers are, perhaps, or how popular your company ranks against your competitors, I can kind of see that. I could see that working better for the enterprise than for us as individuals.
Yeah, I mean, especially I think one of the things we talked about last week with Clout is that they're also trying to fill the void as far as content creation and giving you more insight into what articles were perhaps the most popular through your network. So it's not just about being an influencer, but also understanding who you're influencing. And that becomes a big part of the content play with them, I think. So that becomes almost an interesting story, too, with Lithium, in that that's probably a space that they don't really play in all that much.
Yeah.
And one thing I will say about Clout, which really surprised me, Sarah, is this conference I spoke at this weekend was a B2B conference. So business to business, you know, a lot of people not really that familiar with social media. But one of the questions that I got at the end of my keynote was about Clout. And they were asking me what I thought of Clout, if they should use it. And it made me realize that even though Clout may be not something that we like, I think they've developed a really strong brand. And if they can kind of pivot a little bit, maybe this acquisition will help and they can stay alive with being a more useful service. The brand of Clout is so recognizable in some ways and so strong that I think they could have a really interesting future.
I think Clout has gotten a really bad rap over the last couple of years because it makes people uncomfortable to feel as though they're ranked lower than somebody else that they, in a social sense. You know, if I'm on Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus and LinkedIn and Instagram and YouTube all day, every day, and I feel like I'm really putting effort into it and I've got some low number as compared to the schlub next to me that I know doesn't work that hard, you know, I'm going to be mad about that because it's like, you're just not as good as somebody else. And it is a popularity contest and that makes people uncomfortable. But yes, used in a professional sense that's designed to help businesses know their audiences better, that works very well, at least
better.
In theory.
Yeah. I'm with you. I hate the whole Clout number system, you know, scoring people based on their influence. It never really worked. I remember in the early days of Clout, I was influential in hockey. And I mean, I haven't watched a full hockey game. And sorry, because I am Canadian, but I haven't watched a hockey game in years. And so it's obviously a bit of an issue. That actually was one of the tweets we got, was asking, there were two tweets, but one was talking about the women's hockey, Canada versus the U.S. But the question we got is from Ken Yonker. And Kenny says, what's your opinion of paper? I found it very engaging in how it connects with my friends' blogs. And Sarah, I don't know if you've really played around with paper, but I have to admit I haven't. Have you been getting kind of a good response to paper from people in your network?
Well, he's talking about Facebook paper and that, you know, not to be confused with paper, the iPad app from a company called 53, but what's interesting about paper that I like the design. I think that and Leo and I talked about this on iPad Day, and I even covered it on i5 as well. I like the idea that Facebook wants to reinvent its own newsfeed and give us more kind of not just a more interesting design, but a different group of stories that are shared and posted by our friends. But I'm not sure that I agree with Ken that it's really opening me up to my friends' blogs. Now, of course, it just depends on what's being shared on paper. Yeah, this is the iPhone interface, and it's kind of bugged some people because apparently the team says we're just in the U.S. App Store for now. We're just an iOS app for now, and we're not even going to be an iPad app for now. And that seems so limiting to a lot of people. In fact, I got a lot of complaints from people after I showed off this app outside of the U.S. saying, what is up with that? Facebook is not not some sort of like U.S. only company. That's just so lame. So I think that this is Facebook's, you know, this is they're on full experiment mode. I don't think that there's any reason for the company to go crazy. Let's have a huge press conference about this. Let's be in every country, because they're probably, at least for, you know, they picked the U.S. for, because they're based in the U.S., to see how it works. But it is a very nicely done way to read the news. It's a Facebook product that doesn't look anything like Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, just from what I've seen of Paper, it seems like the design is really slick. It's just something I would probably never use, because I don't know if I'm ever going to come around to this, but I just don't see Facebook as a place where I really get news or information. It feels more like a overly personal kind of gossip site in some ways or something. It doesn't feel like the information is ever really that interesting as far as being all that newsworthy. It's more personal. It's more diary-like. And in that sense, I like to poke in and kind of leave kind of quickly. So it's not necessarily for me.
Yeah, it makes two of us. Yeah, Facebook. It's Facebook is becoming this weird thing where the company is concerned that it needs to keep innovating, but those innovations are these standalone apps that are confusing to me, because there's Facebook, the Facebook, and then there's Facebook Paper, which is more of just a, hey, you might want to read some stuff that's being socially shared for a while. And then there's Facebook Messenger, which is just a one-on-one conversation. And then there's, well, I can't really think of anything else that I'm using regularly, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we could talk about Facebook for hours, but we will put a lid on it, at least for this episode. We do like hearing from you, though. Everybody who tweets, Amber is really good at pulling your tweets in real time. Do write us at Sarah Lane, at Amber Mack on Twitter. But you can also email us throughout the week with some of your story suggestions or feedback or any comments that you have on what you'd like us to talk about or what we have. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is that address. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626 social. That's 2626 SOCIAL. You can record a video. You can do it all, really. I mean, you could leave some sort of a little breadcrumb trail for us on the internet, and we're bound to find it eventually, because our Google alerts are always turned on as well.
It's true. We'll find it somehow. But Twitter seems to be one of the best ways to reach out, especially a day or so before the show. If you have stuff you want us to include, it's
exactly
a good timing. You know, a week before, by that time, it feels a little bit late, but within 24 hours of the show, we're always looking for new and fresh content. So please share. And as Sarah said, any videos or audio recordings, those would be awesome as well.
Absolutely. All right. I know we have some sort of an Olympics conversation coming up in Rad or Fad. Before that, let's take a moment to thank 99 Designs for their support of The Social Hour. 99 Designs makes it easy to get, quite simply, the design that you want. The exact design that you want and you're going to love. This is an online platform that connects creative people like you, entrepreneurs, people with great ideas, but not necessarily great design skills, with a community of over 270,000 graphic designers who are professional and who do have those skills. You might be looking for a new logo, a website, something on paper, a t-shirt. There is a designer at 99 Designs that can bring your great idea to life and even expand on it and give you something you never even knew was possible. Look at all these great designs. And that's just, you know, it's beautiful. In fact, Twit has been using 99 Designs because we're putting together new t-shirts and we've got these designs and people are voting on them. And yeah, it's really cool. It's fun to see how many talented people come up with different designs based on the ideas that you give them. And that's the great thing about 99 Designs is because you don't have to choose one design off the bat. You select the design that you like the most after you've kind of let the designers refine their ideas a little bit, give them some feedback, but then you pay for the design that you like the best, the design that you want. So it works out really well in your favor. Selection speed, creativity, those are all benefits of having more than one designer work on your design project instead of just one person. Process is fun, it's fast, it's 100% satisfaction guaranteed, and you can start your next graphic design project for as little as $199. Anybody who has worked with graphic designers in the past knows that these projects can creep up in price really quickly. So this is a great deal. Visit 99designs.com/social hour and you'll get something for free, a $99 power pack of services. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Design will highlight and feature your project in their marketplace. You'll get a lot more designs, twice as many designs. So do use that URL if you're going to use 99 Designs and take advantage of a free gift. 99designs.com/social hour. And we thank 99 Designs for their support of our show. All right, Amber, it's the time of the show when we decide if something's rad or fat.
Rad or fat. Okay, before we get to rad or fat, I just wanted to mention, I might have mentioned this on the show before, and this is aside from rad or fat, but if I forget to say it next week, Sarah, people should definitely check out the Pinterest business blog. Mm. It just reminded me because I got an email that came in. If you want to know how to use Pinterest well, I think that they do the best job of creating content on their blog in terms of how to do really great content and share content and everything. So just that's a really quick extra tip
nice.
For the show. And for our rad or fat this week, it's an app called Blocko, which I kind of like the name. And what Blocko does is that it will help you block scores or spoilers, I should say, from the Winter Olympics. And those are spoilers that would be potentially shared on Twitter or Facebook. And if you use Blocko, you can block conversations around some of these specific sports at the Winter Olympics. And that will help you stay on top of what the scores are when you have time to actually check them out. So you don't have to worry about spoil alerts. We've seen these apps many times before, I think, particularly for different TV series that are airing. Mm-hmm. But in the sports world, this seems a little bit new. And I don't know how I feel about it. I have sort of mixed feelings. I'll throw it over to you, Sarah.
Now, is this... Okay, so I would say the number one place that I inadvertently read spoilers would be on Twitter. And I... The Olympics is a great example of that because so much of what I am allowed to see, even if I'm watching it on the news, is time delayed by a lot. Mm-hmm. So it's no secret. It's not like everyone in Russia cares about the rest of us. It's, you know, there are people getting gold medals and people talking about it and it being on the news. But I'd say, okay, well, Twitter would be a place that I would stay off of if I really didn't want to find out how the ice skating competition ended. And, you know, I can keep my TV off. But is Blocko its own app that I would, I guess I would pull in my
yes.
Twitter credentials and Facebook and that sort of thing. So that would become my interface.
Yes, just for the period that the Olympics is taking place. So it's available right now in the U.S. And it's an iOS app, and it will help you block all those different sports. So it looks like they have filters for up to 15 Winter Olympic events, including skiing, bobsled, curling, hockey, luge, Nordic combined, snowboarding, skeleton, speed skating, and short track speed
wow.
skating.
So the Blocko folks have definitely, they've got keywords for Olympic stuff specifically because it's very much about
yeah.
blocking out. No matter what anybody says, it's designed to be like you will not hear about who... you know, got the fastest time in the luge. You
no.
will not. I think this is great. I probably don't care about the Olympics enough to use this myself, but that's just because I'm a negative Nancy about the Olympics sometimes. I think this goes for this if the execution works flawlessly, then I want this just for everything. Because there are certain, you know, TV shows or pieces of news for whatever reason I don't want spoiled, and it's really hard to stay away from that stuff online these days.
Mm-hmm. It is. I keep laughing because you said negative Nancy. I don't think I've heard that term in many years.
I know. I don't think I've said it in many years. I don't know where these things come from. I was like, what's the term for what I am right now? Negative Nancy, I guess that's
it
right.
It reminds me of one of my first jobs in San Francisco. I had a boss who, I remember he turned to me and he said, oh, aren't you just a chatty Kathy? And I don't know why, but I'll never forget that. But it seemed very condescending at the time. But negative Nancy is a new one. And I may use that, Sarah. But
please do.
I think this is neat. It's a very niche oriented group of users. I mean, I think that's the thing. I'm like you. I can't really imagine why I would want to use something like this, because I don't think I follow the sports that closely. But and at first I was pretty negative Nancy on it too, Sarah, but I'm warming up to the idea, because I'm thinking there are a lot of people who care a lot about the Olympics. Mm-hmm. and particularly those people don't care just about the Olympics. There are specific sports, I think, that they care about. Like hockey is one great example of that. So I think in that case it could be kind of fun. I think what maybe I'm changing my tune from fad to rad on this one, especially because it's geared towards kind of the period of the Winter Olympics. So maybe you don't want to use an app like this all the time, but it's more of an event-based app, even though I know they do other sports. But for this particular usage, for a couple weeks, maybe download this and use it, and then go back to using the native apps for Twitter and Facebook.
So. I think so. I think if it matters that much to you, then even if it's an app that you use for a short period of time, spoilers really suck. I mean, if you've gone out of your way to try to not have something spoiled and it happens, I mean, it's a day ruiner. It can be. I know that it's a first world problem and everything, but I think Blocko, which is BLOKO, so it's sort of like, I guess, like a knockout reference type thing. I like it, and I know that Amber, you and I tend to agree that something's either rad or fad, but that's just because we're both right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's okay.
By the way, there is a weird thing going on in chat right now where some people are telling me that Negative Nancy is not what it's called at all. It's Negative Nelly. I've never heard that before. So I think maybe it's a regional thing.
Oh, it could be.
Tomato, guys.
I'm just looking at Blue Stripe Creative, who tweeted us earlier, said that maybe another term could be attentive Amber. So I think they're coming up with specific
Amber
adjectives for.
That's great.
So how about Sassy Sarah?
Sassy Sarah, I'll take it.
Kind of works, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Better than Saucy Sarah, although that might be a little bit more apropos. All right. Well, let's just not. It is Thursday, and we've come to the end of our social hour. A fun, fun show, if I do say so myself. Thanks to everybody for watching and listening. Remember, we are live on Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, for those of you who like to be a part of the show when it's live with all of our little, I was going to say mistakes, but we didn't really have any mistakes in the show.
Oh, snuffleupagus eyelashes. You never know what you're going to see, especially if you watch the live show.
That's exactly right. Yes, audio listeners, we love you guys, but you are missing Amber's very long eyelashes that look extremely good. Sesame character-like, in fact. Sesame Street character-like.
Oh, boy.
Amber, do you have anything crazy going on in the next week before we meet again?
Well, I just saw on the side of a bus that House of Cards season 2 comes out tomorrow on Netflix. Uh-huh. So I have a feeling I'm going to have some late nights and try to stay up and watch all of that before it gets spoiled for me on social media. And aside from that, you know, just other, you know, random kind of winter things that happen in Canada.
Excellent.
A lot of indoor activity.
Yes, yes. Do stay warm. Stay warm and dry.
What about you, Sarah?
I can't say that it's looking at my calendar here. Twit has Monday off, but that doesn't affect us. It's a President's Day holiday here in the U.S. So it'll be a little bit of a longer weekend than usual, which is a lot of fun. But I'm looking forward to our show next Thursday. So until then, I guess we'll just see everybody online. Hi, Amber.
We'll see you all online. Thanks for watching. We'll see you soon.